begin my reflection, I just wanted to make mention of the power of one little candle, even a tea light. I saw something quite interesting. It was on Facebook, but it was a YouTube video. And it was about things that you could do to prepare food when you're camping. And what they had was like a muffin tin with tea lights in each of the places. And they were actually cooking over the top of all of these tea lights. So I'm assuming that they put up enough heat that people were able to do that. One little light may seem like it's insignificant, but when you have a number together, and that's the beauty of community. So getting back to our gospel lesson, as the first major piece of teaching within the Sermon on the Mount after the Beatitudes, Jesus is teaching about salt and light and his explanation about his teachings in relation to the law. And this serves as a helpful orienting piece to the whole of the Sermon on the Mount. Unlike so many other languages, including Greek, in which this text was originally written, English is impoverished for its lack of differentiation between the singular and the plural second person, you. It is important to note, though, that in chapter 5, verses 13 to 16, they are addressed to a plural audience, y'all. That is, no one individual embodies salt and light. Rather, the full community is needed to exemplify that which most resembles the salt and light of which Jesus speaks. I guess you could say the same thing about a few grains of salt. But if you add a lot more salt to that, I mean, you'd only want a few grains, I think, if you were seasoning. But if you were using it as a preservative or any other purpose, maybe even as something that you would cleanse wounds with, a saline solution. It's collective. These metaphors themselves bespeak a communal reality. That is, that salt is most effective in its work when it's used with other elements. In culinary matters, salt works in tandem with other food to bring out the best flavor. For many sacrifices described in the Hebrew Bible, salt accompanies the sacrificed meat or food. And as a metaphor, light also functions somewhat communally. That is, in the absence of anything else, light serves little function. Rather, for light to be the most effective, it must emerge within a poorly illuminated environment to brighten that which already exists so that it may be perceived by others in that space. An event that you might actually recall if you had recently lost power. You know, the candle there, if this room suddenly became dark, we'd really notice that candle that came if we were in a dark environment. So as we're talking about this in the season of Epiphany, it may be worthwhile recalling the words from Isaiah that opened this liturgical season. Arise, shine, for your light has come. This chapter in Matthew is especially notable for the contrast that it poses to material later in a subsequent chapter. In that later text, Jesus will warn about the public practice of one's righteousness. Here, though, Jesus encourages his audience to let their good works be seen by others. Furthermore, he suggests that personal righteousness must be of the highest level. How then might this seemingly contradiction within the sermon be understood? So one possibility for understanding this contradiction is to examine the parts of this text that are descriptive versus the parts of the text that are prescriptive. So in other words, what words are descriptive, describing, and what words are prescriptive or giving a prescription for? That is, Jesus begins this series of instructions by indicating to his audience that they are the salt of the earth and the light of the world. The verbs here are indicative, and that is that they indicate an existing condition. They don't prescribe it. They're not telling them that they could become. They are saying that they are. The only imperative in this text is in verse 16. And even here, though the command that is given is not actually a command to Jesus' human audience, rather this text includes a grammatical form that does not clearly exist in English, thus it is difficult for us to understand, a third person imperative. This means that what is translated in our New Revised Standard Version as "let your light shine" is not actually a command to the human audiences. It is a command to the light itself. And this is significant because it means that the human audience are not being issued explicit instructions about how they are to behave. Instead, that which comprises the human existence already, for example, salt, light, is simply instructed to be made even more manifest than what it already is. It is not for humans to accomplish any particular work. Humans are simply to allow their core essence to be made more evident. And thus, the seeming contrast between the two chapters in Matthew do not actually present a contradiction that it might seem to impose on the surface. Whereas chapter 6 is cautionary against what is the performative enacting of particular actions, which are intended to capture the attention of others. So the performative righteousness. In chapter 5, it is instead celebrating the ways in which humans most authentically reflect that which already comprises their essence. Now, the text shifts somewhat in the chapter, Matthew, from the theme of celebrating this manifestation of human characteristics within existing communities to the topic of how Jesus' instruction relates to communities of old. Though this might at first seem like an odd way in which to describe Jesus' teachings about the law, it is nonetheless the case that the law serves as a thread connecting past and present. The importance of Jesus' indication in Matthew chapter 5 is about how he perceives his teaching in relation to the Mosaic law. And it can't be minimalized. That is, while the so-called antithesis in chapter 5 could be seen to give the impression that Jesus is overturning or otherwise modifying the law, his statements should be understood as the foundation upon which all of his subsequent instruction is based. Audiences, such as ourselves, of this text for today, would do well to remember that Jesus preaches as a teacher who is steeped within the Jewish tradition and the Jewish faith. That is, Jesus should not be understood as offering something that supersedes the law. Instead, his teaching should be viewed as that of one who holds the law in the greatest respect. For Christian preachers who stand in the long shadow of Jesus in bringing the good news to our communities of faith today, care is warranted in the approach to this text. There's a warning for the preacher. That is, that the preacher who emulates Jesus fundamentally imitates one who upheld and celebrated the Jewish faith. Jesus' teachings then are best understood as those of a Jewish reformer, not as those of one who is attempting to denigrate and displace an outdated religious system. The communal nature of Jesus' teaching undergird the communal nature of his teachings further in the Sermon on the Mount. That is, as Jesus upholds the importance of the law, he simultaneously upholds the historical connection between his own time and Moses's. The communal connection across time, which we should be most aware of today. We're hearing these words today. So this communal connection across time offers an important example for us today. That is, we would do well to follow Jesus' example of reaching into the faith's history to find modern meaning. Relevance, as Jesus demonstrates, need not be measured by historical proximity. Rather, relevance can emerge as most effective in our living when we both teach and perform the very actions that the ancient law demands. May we retain our salt-like characteristics without losing our authentic nature. And may we continue to be lights who follow the light of Jesus. May we go and make this so. Thanks be to God. Amen.